All right, ladies, buckle up.
It's showtime.
It's showtime.
It's showtime.
It's showtime.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Mayonnaise Talk. This is our 52nd episode for the podcast. I am your co-host, Julian, and with me, as always,
Johnny Lightfoot.
Johnny, how are we doing so far? We can definitely tell now here in Austin that the weather is slowly but surely starting to change. So how do you feel?
Oh, yeah, it is. It's definitely changing. Yeah, man, I went for a walk this morning and it was nice and cool. We're getting that fall winter going in. Girlfriend and I made, what was it? Pumpkin carrot cake oatmeal this morning.
Okay.
And it was delicious. It definitely felt like fall. And I got the pumpkin spice candles going, and yeah, fall is here. Hopefully it stays a little while.
I was going to say, I understand everybody wanting to jump into the fall weather yet. I'm going to wait 2 weeks. I'm going to wait till October
just
comes.
Just give it a little time.
Yeah, just give it a little time, because you never know. Texas weather is always unpredictable. So
yeah, we're going to wait. 100 degrees followed by some thunder showers
could strike
any
at
minute.
Any moment. So yeah. With that being said, guys, we're going to go into our big topic, which will be the devil at all times. But before we do that, we're going to talk about some movie news. And even though it's still a pandemic going on, we do have some box office numbers to go around. So without further ado, Johnny, what are the box office numbers that happened this past weekend?
So as of right now, at least domestically, we're looking at Tenet sitting at the top spot with $4.7 million, bringing its domestic total to $36.1. Number two, ooh, New Mutants, bringing in $1.6 million, bringing its domestic total to $17.7 million. And number three is Infidel, new movie. I haven't, I've heard some things about it. I do want to see it.
Okay.
So it's its first week, so 1.5 total. Number four, Unhinged, still bringing in a little money. $1.3 million, bringing its domestic to 15.7, and okay, rounding out the top five, the SpongeBob movie, Sponge on the Run, $210,000, bringing its domestic to 4.2 million, excuse me. So that's your top five.
Wait,
at the box office.
I'm sorry. I mean, this is just going to be baffling for me. SpongeBob came out. Nickelodeon really decided to put SpongeBob out on theaters.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering, 210,000. Maybe it just played on like some drive-ins or something.
That's what I'm thinking, because I never heard of any.
Okay,
I haven't heard of anything.
Here it is. It's only playing on 261 screens. So I'm wondering if they're doing a limited like drive-through release, and then they're dropping it. I thought I heard they were dropping it VOD.
That's what they were talking about. Nickelodeon was assuming that they were going to drop it VOD. I did not know that they were going to put it in theaters and drive-ins of all places. So it's kind of weird. Okay, all right, Nickelodeon. I'm surprised you did that. Okay, all right, and now, is there anything besides, like I said, SpongeBob? I would have assumed they would have told us about this. That sticks out to you by any chance?
So, I mean, the obvious one is Tenet.
Yes.
You and I have both seen it on our last episode of Matinee Talk. We reviewed it along with Brett. But, I mean, the domestic total right now is sitting at 36.1. I would gather that's probably half of what they were thinking they were going to bring in on opening weekend.
Yep.
Or at least that's what they were thinking like 8-9 months ago. That's what they were thinking. Right now, internationally, it's brought in $203 million. So bringing its domestic total to $239 million. Again, that doesn't account for, we're recording this on a Sunday. It'll drop on a Wednesday. So it could.
And Hollywood, Hollywood Reporter and Deadline both agree that it will hit the $250 million mark by Monday.
Okay. So with that being said, Tenet still, to break even, needs to hit like $400 to $500 million worldwide.
I agree.
Granted, they didn't do a ton of marketing, but they did drop some pretty big marketing during, they had that whole Fortnite thing, which was kind of weird to me, but I guess that was at the time the only sport, quote unquote, playing. What does this mean? I mean, to me, it means nothing, because Warner Brothers next movie with Christopher Nolan, they're still going to give him $150-200 million. So at the end of the day.
So I was going to say, for Warner Brothers and Christopher Nolan, regardless, I do not believe this is going to change anything in terms of their relationship. For this movie, I feel like Warner Brothers, which I think will be smart on their end, if they were to do a re-release when everything settles down, that would be smart. Just to sell, everybody can get the film, the theatrical experience of seeing Tenet, but because of everybody's worries about about COVID-19 and just being safe all around, I would say that's why it's not making money, but I would say it's not going to change anything. But what it will change is how films are going to now be released for the next foreseeable future.
Yeah, I mean, initially I was thinking Warner Brothers would give them, I don't know, maybe a 3-month window before dropping it on VOD. Now I'm starting to think Warner Brothers might be like, hey, you know what? It's beginning in November.
Yep.
We're going to go ahead and, hey, drop it on VOD for $20, maybe 30, but I would think probably 20, 25 maybe, because that's what Scoob was initially.
Yeah. So but with 25, you can own Scoob. Like what they did, 25, you own Tenet, and then 20, you could just rent it. Yeah.
So I could definitely see them fast-tracking dropping Tenet on VOD to try to just, let's get money. Because there's some foreign countries that now are having spikes.
And that's why
opening up.
I was saying that's why they are hitting over $200 million worldwide globally, because countries are still now opening up their doors to let people go to the theaters and stuff like that. Whereas here, we're still struggling how to get.
Well, that's together. What's crazy is I saw a commercial for Tenet maybe a week or two ago. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the commercial, it says now open in Texas theaters. And it was like they're basically saying, hey, y'all down in Texas, y'all are open. So, hey, if y'all want to go watch Tenet, go Texas.
I feel like in personal experience, that's why I was like, we said this before when we came back and started recording in June. This is going to be the make or break for where movies are going to move for the next couple of months. And as we figured, because of the numbers are low, everybody is pushing everything back. Now, Wonder Woman's got pushed back again till Christmas, I think. Candyman, the movie with Nia DaCosta, who I'm waiting to see. It's not been pushed to unspecified 2021. I don't know all the other movies that got pushed back, but it's just basically the writing was on the wall. This was going to happen, and now all your big tentpole films that were supposed to come out later this year because of coronavirus and because of the pandemic are probably going to get pushed till 2021.
Yeah. No, without a doubt. Okay, moving on. Julian has some news coming out of DC and Warner Brothers. Julian, what we got?
So, crazy enough, DC Universe, which has been a streaming app for you to get all your DC like networks for like Doom Patrol, Young Justice, the new Harley Quinn show, the Swamp Thing, which has been unceremoniously canceled for no apparent reason. They are all basically, the DC Universe is getting a revamp. It's going to be called DC Universe Infinite. It is going to be a comic-centric app. So it's going to be like how Marvel Unlimited is. You pay it some amount of month, I don't know how much, but basically it's just going to be comic book-centric. All of the shows, all the content that's on DC Universe will be relocating and moving to HBO Max. And if I remember correctly, it'll be somewhere in January of 2021 when the full migration will happen.
Yeah, I believe it's the 21st of January. And I was a loyal DC Universe subscriber.
I was as well.
And I did the subscription before it even launched. Like, I was looking forward to this so much. And they really dropped the ball to me.
Yes.
In terms of what they put out there, how much time in between their new shows they waited. Because, like, Titans, the first season doesn't even really get that great until maybe 7 or 8.
I was going to say second to last, third to last episode. Yeah.
And then it just ends and you're like, what? And I mean, whatever. We need to get used to those cliffhanger endings we haven't had in years, because now seasons wrap up and you're like, okay, we're good to go, outside of like Game of Thrones. Walking Dead used to do that. I don't know if they still do, which, by the way, Walking Dead is finally ending. They're going to finish this season 10 and do one more. They're going to do one more. Oh, God.
They're doing more spin-offs.
How many are they up to now? Like 10?
At this point, I lost count. Are they
still planning on doing like Michonne and Rick movies?
Yes.
People still care enough. I can't believe that. And this is coming from somebody who read The Walking Dead comic religiously from the jump. Because when it first was coming out, I actually was working at a comic book shop. So I just read everything and I was like, wow, this is really great. And then the show came out and I was just like, okay, this is kind of following it. And then it gets a little better. Good.
Yeah, the first two, like, the first three seasons. And
then I think once the governor went away, then it was just gone.
See, I dipped off before we go back into topic. I was not a huge comic book fan of Walking Dead. I started getting into the comics after watching the second season on Netflix. And I was like, wow, this show is probably really good. And so like I did with Breaking Bad, I started watching religiously Walking Dead from season three. And when the governor was finally coming into fruition, but then when season four happened, when they kept trying to prolong the governor's story arc, I'm like, oh no, this is the exact same thing formula for every season. And I dropped off, and all my friends who are still trying to like migrate and push it through, it's not good for them. And thank God it's ending, but how many more spinoffs can we make? Like, seriously, AMC, how many times are we going to milk this cow? Like, let it go. But
Back to Infinite. Yeah. It's going to be comic-centric. So that was actually part of my initial disappointment with DC Universe.
Yes.
Was, yeah, you gave us some of the movies. You gave us this one new TV show. But then the comics you were giving, you would give like one or two issues of certain story arcs.
Yep.
And then so I was like, okay, cool. I'm reading this comic on my tablet or my phone. And then I'm like, oh, I can't finish the story. Or you're giving me like issues. We're going to concentrate on Nightwing this month. So you're giving me like one or two issues from different story arcs. And I don't know if that's to get me to want to like go buy the graphic novel or what. But I think the DC Infinite, especially with COVID taking a huge hit on the comic book store industry, with people just not wanting to go buy comics. And I was always a physical media. I'm still a physical media when it comes to movies. I've always bought my comics and graphic novels. I didn't want to go digital.
I never wanted to go digital.
But I think even people like me, they started going full digital. And DC's like, if we want to survive and we want to keep making comics, here's your subscription service. And we're not going to put all of the new stuff out right away. But based on some of the articles, it does seem like some of the series, they are going to drop live on this DC Universe Infinite same day as... Regular release.
So see, that's what I think was the biggest problem for DC Universe. Like you said,
you didn't get any of the new stuff.
No, you got new movies. You got some of the new movies, some of the DC animated universe movies. You didn't get all of the new movies that were coming out. Like, I'm still mad that Batman versus Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was not on DC Universe for the umpteenth time. But we're not going to get into that. But my issue was the same thing with you. I was trying to read Rebirth of Batman and then the Rebirth of Justice League, where they add Dr. Manhattan, spoiler alert, where they bring in Dr. Manhattan into the story series. But I only could read the first two comics, and I'm like, so where am I going to read the rest of them? And like you said, I'm a physical guy myself. I still have a whole bunch of my graphic novels in physical. And this is the first year where I'm actually thinking, and I hate to say this now, I'm thinking about going digital, and I'm probably going to do that with the new PlayStation 5 with the Xbox, just because I need to do one for my physical movies. I'll keep that like disc with a disc drive in it, but probably the PlayStation 5 I will go discless. But it's a good thing that now they're trying to be able to save the comic book industry doing this, you know? And I feel like this was a great step in the right direction, but you should have done this almost a year ago.
Yeah, and I mean, Jim Lee, great guy. I've got like probably 36 comics signed by him and an original sketch I got at Comic-Con 2007. But he is their chief creative officer, and he says that essentially they'll be able to read all of the great comics that they've enjoyed, but new issues are debuting on the platform quicker than before. Plus, digital-first exclusives are being created, and members-only events will be... begin as soon as possible. So it looks like in some cases you'll even get digital before the physical comic drops.
That's pretty interesting. Okay. And they still haven't talked about pricing or anything like that yet.
Mm-mm. It does say if you're an existing customer, it'll just become that. So I don't know if that means they're sticking to the whatever it is, $7 or $8.
It's like $8 a month, yeah.
So I don't know if that's what that means, but it is transferring open over. It is happening January 21st.
Let me ask you, because we both just said we canceled both of our DC Universe subscriptions. Are we going to renew?
I'm not going to renew initially. I'll tell you that much. I want to see how much is actually on there, because most of the newer, like even comic and graphic novels that are only like 2 years old or so that I've heard great things about, like the Batman Who Laughs and White Knight, things like that.
Yes.
I couldn't get on there, so I just ended up having to go buy the graphic novel anyways. Because I don't follow comics every week like I used to, where I went and bought every month. I was like, oh, I need to get this one, this one, this one.
Yes.
So now I just wait until they're on graphic novel and then I get them. But DC Universe never gave me that, so I always ended up, like, I would look to see if it was on there and then I'd be like, nope.
No.
And then I could go on Amazon, read the first issue for free, and then be like, okay, this is worth buying.
This is something I want to buy now. Exactly. But we'll see. We will see.
All right. Either way, so Toronto International Film Festival, better known as TIFF, has been going on now for the last week or so. And there's some buzz coming out. Obviously, TIFF had to change the way they do things. So they're still doing some screenings there in Toronto. And then to some members of the film community, they're letting them do it virtually or go to drive-thrus in certain cities like LA. To view some of these movies. One such film that's getting a lot of buzz is Nomadland from Chloe Zhao. So it took the Golden Lion at Venice earlier this year, and it also won People's Choice at Toronto. So it won People's Choice at Venice and Toronto. So last year, Jojo Rabbit won that. Green Book won that.
Yeah, it won 2 years prior.
So there's a big list of movies that have won these awards and gone on to get either Oscar nominated or Oscar wins.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of an early look at what could be Best Picture nominee, Best Actress nominee, possible win for Frances McDormand. And honestly, based on what I've heard, it sounds like a really interesting story. This again, Chloe Zhao did The Rider not that long ago, and her next film is going to be Marvel's Eternals.
Yep.
So I'm really interested that somebody doing these sort of small dramatic movies is now going to be doing something that needs to fit into the big scale of a Marvel narrative within that universe.
Before we get into Nomadland, I was going to say, to your notion, it's interesting to see that Marvel is doing this now, because I feel like the first person they did that with was Taika Waititi, in a sense. Taika has done like small budget, but I would say medium to like big budget independent films, and then jumped into Thor Ragnarok. Same thing with Ryan Coogler. He did Fruitvale Station, Creed, and then jumped into Black Panther. And I feel like Marvel is seeing, or MCU is seeing, this good trend of very great independent film directors. Give them enough money and they can make really great blockbusters. And so with Chloe Zhao, I haven't seen any of her films. This will be my first one I watch. But from all of the buzz that we're getting for Nomadland and what I've been hearing about The Rider so much, I feel like Eternals will be that different, but like Thor Ragnarok or Guardians of the Galaxy different, where it could basically put a new thump into what Phase 4 will be for, you know? And I'm excited. Because, like you said, the last two TIFF winners, People's Choice winners, was Jojo Rabbit. Unfortunately, yes, I've still not yet seen Jojo Rabbit, and I'm definitely putting it on my list. But Green Book, both of them kind of gave you a flow of who could win Best Picture, whereas Green Book, no matter how much we feel about it, won Best Picture. And Jojo Rabbit, like, was very, I think, was like maybe second or third runner up, but lost to, I forgot who won Best Picture this year.
Parasite.
Yeah, Parasite, which, I'm sorry, best, one of the best films of the decade. But, you know, I feel like Nomadland, if it doesn't have any hitters like Parasite coming out, which at this point, you don't see any. So I think Nomadland has actually the best chance of winning Best Picture. And I don't know. I'm really waiting to see it because she's written and directed this film, right? Chloe Zhao?
I don't know.
Okay, let's double check myself. But I'm just excited to see something different, you know, because we're going to talk about the movie that I just got done talking about. Yeah, Chloe did write Nomadland. And, you know, I'm tired of seeing these, I call them B-list movies that Netflix is just strutting on and putting on my feed, which I'm not mad about. It's just I wish there's better pickings of things, but this will be our first, like, hey, Oscar-nominating movies. Here we go. Here's our first push of them. And it's supposed to be releasing when? Either theatrically
or VOD? December 4th. Okay. December 4th.
So it's going to be interesting to see how this movie gets momentum going into the Oscar season this coming up.
And then just a little buzz out of the two runners-up were Regina King's One Night in Miami, which I'm looking forward to seeing, and then Tracy Deer's Beans. So I'm looking forward to both of those whenever we get to see them. Whenever we
get those.
Coming up next, we'll see New York Film Festival and Montclair Film Festival, Fantastic Fest, unfortunately, which was supposed to start this week. We'll be going 100% virtual for free.
I was going to say, I don't know what any movies there are. There any new movies coming in?
For yeah, they're doing 10 new features.
Okay.
And then new short features, and then coupled in with a bunch of like weird screenings.
Okay.
But that'll be running this Thursday through the following Thursday.
That's what I figured.
Okay. And it will be on the Alamo On Demand app, either on Apple TV, iPhone, iPad, whatever. It is not currently available on Roku. But you know, if you can get it on, you can get it on your laptop, plug your laptop in the TV. It's free outside of, I think, one or two screenings. If you watch them live, they're like $2.99.
And you know which two screenings they are?
Not off the top of my head. And they are doing a secret screening. So,
God damn it.
Okay. The secret screening will be next Thursday or Sunday, excuse me, Sunday.
So this upcoming Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so, I mean, I'm interested. I'll be watching. I just basically pushed my badge from 2020 to 2021, and they made it an even nicer thing by making everybody be able to watch everything for free. You just have to RSVP with your email.
Which, thank you for telling me that. I will definitely be doing that at the end of this podcast. But, okay. Bet. All right. Looks like this will be my first ever Fantastic Fest, but virtual.
Virtual.
All right.
So our main topic today is going to be Antonio Campos' The Devil All the Time, which just came out recently on Netflix. Before Julian and I get into our thoughts on that, here's a little word from our sponsor. And we're back. Welcome back. We're going to talk about Netflix's The Devil All the Time. Julian, initial thoughts.
So, first time in a very long time, I had to write notes about this film. What's the best way to put it? It feels like, from the trailer, it was trying to be ambitious. That's the word I would like to use. Mm-hmm. But, initial thoughts, it was okay. It wasn't fantastic. It didn't blow my socks off. It wasn't something that was not tread before. It was fine. It was fine. One word that I kept highlighting and highlighting throughout my notes that I have right here is it's a very messed up family. I'm not going to use the expletive in this podcast, but yes, this is a very messed up family that they're in. It's very, very depressing, but it basically is depressing on tropes that we already seen in organized religion movies. Spoiler alert. That's the mini spoiler we're going to give you. This movie is basically kind of like treading on cultish organized religion views, which again, there's so many movies that have already done this before. And I feel like it really does try, but again, it doesn't tread on any waters. The performances are phenomenal, absolutely amazing. The sound design and the sound mixing is also really good, but I feel like the story, it didn't add anything new. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, initially this was a pretty tough watch.
Yes.
It is a longer movie. It's about 2 hours and 20 minutes. It does have a star-studded cast. I will give it that.
Absolutely.
And all of the actors in it, to me, seem to be giving it their all.
Highlights is, I've said Tom Holland, Harry Melling, and Robert Pattinson were my top guys who I saw in this.
Yeah, and I mean, different turns for Sebastian Stan.
Riley Keough.
And then Riley Keough, Jason Clarke. I love me some Jason Clarke, and it's so weird to see him play somebody I don't like.
So to your point, like we're going to bring it back just a little bit. From Pet Sematary last year, right? I was like, oh, wow, Jason Clarke might want to be great in Pet Sematary. And I was disappointed. In this film, this is the Jason Clarke that I wanted to get. And I, like I said, it was some great performances. And you, as much as some of these people are very shitty, we're not going to get into it right now. You're sitting there like, wow, you're a shitty person, but your performance is making me kind of not think of you that way. But it's so good. Like, there's so many different things. We can't talk about it right now in the spoiler view. But yes, I enjoyed all of that. And what about you? What is your...
I mean, one that both of us forgot to mention was Bill Skarsgård in the first
third. Oh my God, in the first... Yes.
Playing Willard Russell, who is Tom Holland's dad. So Tom Holland is Arvin Russell. You also have Haley Bennett in there for a little while playing the mother, Charlotte Russell. So, I mean, all of these characters, very well done. The actors are great. I didn't care for having a narrator. Like, if your movie makes so little sense that you have to narrate what people are feeling and why they're feeling it. I mean, I get it, because you have to say like, oh, so-and-so felt they need to go. And it's like, is this person reading? Was this written like it was supposed to be a book?
Yes.
Or is this based off a book?
So it is based off a book. It's based off of a guy's experience, the writer, who is actually the narrator of the story. Who is the narrator of the film? I forgot his name. But he wrote this book called Devil All the Time. It is about his experiences when he was growing up in West Virginia, in that area of the Midwest. So these are all his experiences. So having him come in as a narrator and sounding as profound as he did was great. I put that in my notes. As much as I love his narration, I feel like you are holding my hand too much. Mm-hmm. And I felt like you said, this was off of a book, but I feel like you did way too much book reading and you're trying to hold my hand as if this was a book that you're telling in film. But in film, you got to trust your audience a little bit more.
Yeah, and trust your actors to portray those feelings. Like, okay, I don't need you to tell me that Tom Holland's character, Arvin, as a child, now feels the most alone he's ever felt. Just show me.
I can see that, right.
Just show me.
Or, like, for instance, I'm not going to spoil it yet, but at the end of the movie, when the narrator's explaining something that some character feels, and the actor is doing that exact emotion, I'm like, I'm sorry, dude. You do not need to tell me this. If Tom Holland, Robert Pattinson, Riley Keough, and Sebastian, because those are the main people that he kind of narrates for you and give you emotions. If they're giving me those emotions through film, I don't need you to like narrate that. And I feel like, I also put in my notes, I feel like they did that too much and they gave way too many really good story points too early with his narration. Like
the part with Lenore.
Yes.
Where the mother's leaving and you narrate, little did she know that this was going to be the last time she would see her daughter.
I'm like, really? Did you have to narrate that?
Because now I know something bad's going to happen. So when you come back to it later, then I'm just waiting to find out what it is.
Right.
And the way the direction sets it up, it already sets up who's going to get something wronged and who's going to do the wronging. You set it up through the narration and then the camera shots. And you could have done that differently. Don't have that and then cut your movie down by that. Could have been like 7 minutes you cut down, because basically you replayed the exact same scene again, but without the narrator telling you what's going to happen.
And I feel like that's what was the issue with that was my biggest issue with Devil All the Time. And I was like, you're holding my hand throughout this entire movie, and I should be able to, as an audience, not have you hold my hand and do that. And one of my other biggest problems about that is, speaking on that, I felt like this movie tried to do time jumps like a book does, and it doesn't do those really well. Like you said, he... This is the only spoiler I'm going to give in a non-spoiler talk. Like Johnny just said, Lenora is basically doing something with her child, and all of a sudden, we hear the narrator say, little did she know this would be our last time. And we go about 10 years, I want to say. About
10 years and about 45 minutes to an hour into the movie, and then you replay that exact same scene.
We go back 10 years.
And then, but then you show what happens.
Right, and that's why I was like, that's for me, it was like, okay, I would understand if you didn't give me the narration, but now you give me the narration, then doing a time jump, then you go back through the time jump to say, hey, this is what actually happened through that narration. It's like,
okay. Why do it?
Right. Now, that's why I was so confused. I was like, if we could have shaved off about, for me, looking back at it, we could have shaved about 30 minutes off of this film without doing all of that jumping back and forth.
Well, and what's crazy is last week on, or the week before on If the Armchair Fits, Brett and I were talking about the Nolanisms. And one of the things he does so spectacularly is play with time and non-linear storytelling. And it's something that Quentin Tarantino does very well. And I think that's what this director tried to do, was play with nonlinear storytelling, and it's weak.
And to your point, 2 weeks ago, like I talked about on Tenet's review, there's only so many directors, like we just mentioned, that can do time jumps and make it to a point where I won't be confused. And we talked about Gentlemen trying to do that, and it didn't do a good job. And I feel like The Devil All the Time, if it was just a linear story and you played everything linear instead of trying to do all these time jumps, it would have been so much better.
Yeah, just play it linear, get rid of the narrator, and then let your actors work. You've got the talent.
And the act, and that's what I'm saying. The acting was so damn good. And for it to have just this story that kind of just fell off to the wayside, and you make some directing choices that I didn't agree with, it just took a lot of the heart out of this movie. And it took a lot of things that could have been punching, great punches in this movie, but you got rid of it just basically because of whatever narrative choices you decided to do. But I digress. What is something else that you felt about?
So, I will say this. So the story in general... This is not a story for the faint of heart.
No.
Or if you are someone who can get triggered by a story pertaining to a certain way people live through their religion.
Yes.
This dates back to, and like I said, it's a powerful performance from Bill Skarsgård and even the grandmother. But the way they kind of show this fire and brimstone type of Midwest, the way I know it, is this Southern Baptist
religion
sort of way, where you have this small community, and it's one of those things where anytime and I don't want to get too religious, we're not a religious podcast, we're not political, but the way it is if you're not with us, you're against us.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't do certain things a certain type of way, you're going to a certain type of place. And there are certain people in this world that are evil. And if they're an evil person, you can do whatever you want to them because you're doing God's
will. You're doing God's will. Exactly. And I feel like, again, we're not trying to harp on the religious aspect of it, but this is what that film kind of tries to tread on. But again, like I was saying, it falls on the same tropes that we already got out of religious cultish films, right? And, you know, growing up, not trying to get political, but growing up and seeing Southern Baptist views and seeing, like, friends and family members being in that Southern Baptist religion back in the south of, like, Beaumont, Texas, you've seen this before. You've seen movies that do this before, and it doesn't tread on new ground. Now, I will say it wants to try to tread on new ground, but again, it falls back into going into a darker route. And I feel like this movie is very bleak, but it didn't decide to be. I think it was doing it more for, you know, just the bleak factor.
It was telling the story that was put on the page.
Yeah.
And then it was like, I think you probably turned around and watched it after it was pieced together, and producers and maybe even the director, maybe the writer who's the narrator, looked at it and was like, maybe it wasn't supposed to be this depressing. But I mean, at the end of the day, it kind of is.
Yes. And seeing, we're not going to get into it yet, but seeing how family trauma goes down generations and how that affects everybody else's life and how one simple decision brings shockwaves into not even just the family's lineage, but the people around them and how it affected them was kind of like cool. But for me, again, I felt like in a book sense, that makes sense. But in terms of a movie, you're forcing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing is reading something is different than seeing it, seeing the emotion on these fantastic actors' faces and seeing them do these horrible things as, you know, good people or bad people.
Yeah.
And it's very hard. It hits you in the face. And I think it wouldn't be as hard if it wasn't so freaking long and you didn't have to rewatch things over and over and over again. Like, okay, you already showed us this. You're showing it to us again. And you're just beating us over the head with, okay, Arvel had a bad childhood and that just followed him right into adulthood.
We've seen it.
And you set up these characters and these storylines, and I understand for the payoff, you want them there. But some of the side stories you show with some of these characters, Sebastian Stan,
yes,
they don't make any sense.
No.
And they don't need to be there. Okay, he's corrupt.
Carl and Sandy. Again, another one. Carl and Sandy. Oh, okay. I get it. I get it that they're a couple and they're doing photography. And on the side note, something they're doing sinister. We're not going to talk about it right now. Not in a spoiler version. And something happens. Why is that so
much? It's all to set up the last act.
Yes. Why are you setting up so much for a little payoff by the end? Thank you.
We care about Arvel.
That's all I care about.
I want to see his story. I care about him and his family. You set it up in the beginning.
As Arvin and Willard's family and they're dealing with shit. Yes.
And you started with Willard. You saw how he got up a certain kind of way. He went to the war. He came back a different man.
Yes.
Kind of forced his religion to a certain degree until certain events transpired, which bring him back to his religion, but in a very extremist
way. Yes.
And you see Arvel's journey going from the child to an adult and why he feels a certain kind of way based on both his upbringing and what he's witnessed.
What he's witnessed, exactly.
And these other jumps where you're going to these other characters doing stuff just so that at the end we can say like, oh, it's okay that X, Y, and Z happens to those people because look at all this stuff they did when you were taking me away from the heart of the story.
Exactly. And I put that in my notes. And it's so funny that I put these in my notes and I haven't shared my notes with my Johnny, but literally it says subplots literally does nothing to add but give you motivation to feel like Arvin is fighting for something or he's getting justified for doing certain things. And we're not going to get into that right now, but I was sitting there and I'm just like, bro, I don't care. And to be honest, if you were, and this is just my point, and I feel like we could talk about this later, but I feel like this movie could have been a limited series. And you could expand it on that stuff to help us like narrate certain things. But in a 2.5-hour movie, I don't care. That's something I don't want to see in my films.
Yeah, it's not pertinent information. All it does is try to give you more justification than you as the audience. You could have given me 5 to 10 minutes, not even with those characters. And what happens is justified.
Yes.
So you don't have to beat me over the head with justifications for why certain things play out the way they do. And that just leads to the long runtime.
And before we get into the spoiler version of it, I want to, because there's so many plot points that I want to talk about that I was like, okay, you could have just gave me that. Now you could have gave me that in narration. I didn't need to see all this, but again, we'll talk about that in the spoiler talk. But really quick, I wanted to ask you, I was sitting there and I was rewatching the first 20 minutes of the movie to make sure that I wasn't just tripping that only we see Bill Skarsgård for maybe 20, 30 minutes of the film and then we just get Tom Holland for the rest of it. Do you feel like this movie should have been half Bill's film and then half Tom's film? Because I feel like
I think so, because you essentially open up with the event that changed Willard's his character.
Life, yes.
Like Willard went from believing in certain things to he just completely shut down until another event in his life triggers that back, but in a very extreme way.
Yes.
It's like he tucked that part of himself away, and then it took another shocking event for him to bring that up, but then just more extreme. And I would have liked to see a little more of that and a little less of those side character journeys.
Yes.
And
that's why I was like, for me, as I was rewatching the beginning of it, I was like, I wish they would expand it more on Willard than what we got with everybody else. We're going to get into everybody else in just a second and why I feel like Harry Melling, who is Roy, who was a preacher during the time of Willard's like life in the Midwest, why I feel like his performance was so good, but we're going to get into that in a moment. But yeah, I'm just sitting there like, wow, I would want to care more about Willard than the 20 minutes I got with him. Because at this point, I'm like, oh, wow, this dude is supposed to be having a very detrimental point into Tom Holland's life. But at the end of the day, it's not like they didn't put enough emphasis on it, if it makes sense. Because they put so much emphasis on everybody else around, but not on Willard. But
exactly.
We'll get on to that later.
All right. With that being said, so now I guess we'll get into some spoilers.
Yes.
So right off the bat, you see within the first 5 minutes, the event that changed Willard. And we never saw him before.
No.
All we know is he came from this very religious background. He, you know, followed that religion until this event during the war.
World War II, yep.
Where he sees, you're meant to assume, a man he doesn't know.
I was about to say,
it is somebody, a fellow soldier.
Right. I thought it was somebody in his platoon or like squad, whatever, gets nailed and like
crucified
on a cross and mutilated. And they don't show you the grotesque version of it, but you can definitely see like, wow, somebody's been on this cross for a very long time, has been mutilated. And that was his trigger point.
And he had to put him out of his misery.
Yes. And you could tell that was his trigger for when he came back home. That's why he didn't want to believe. He didn't want to practice. He didn't want to pray on a cross or anything like that because of PTSD. And he didn't want to continue seeing that soldier being crucified and mutilated on that cross like that. And he just decided, yeah, religion's not my thing anymore.
Yeah. And I mean, he even goes back to that when he's trying to teach Arvin about standing up for himself.
Yeah.
And he tells him in the truck, he says, you know, some people in this world are not good people. You know, those boys who pick on you, not good people. And they might start fights. You got to end it. The important thing is maybe it's not right then and there. He was like, you got to find the right time to end it. And then that's when he goes and those guys who were talking about his wife, he goes and ends it in front of his son.
In front of his son, and literally
just gets back in the truck and is like, hey, you want a candy bar?
And I feel like that was the narrator wasn't even in that part, but damn, well, kind of was at the end. And at that moment, because
yeah, he says like Arvin didn't know that this was going to be the best day he ever had with his dad.
Exactly. And I was like, okay, I see what you're doing there.
You're already setting us up for something we're going to see. Like, we're going to see that.
And like, all you had to do is show me a kid that's like, okay, if this is the only scene I get to see with Arvin and Willard,
it'll make sense.
It'll
make what happens with him as a grown-up, as Tom Holland, what he does to some similar type of people, sense.
It'll make sense already.
And you'll flash back to that moment where he's sitting in the truck watching his father do something similar, and his father tells him, there are bad people in this world, and you got to take care of them. And that's when Armin, as a young kid, is like, maybe even like 100. And his dad's just like,
And that's what bothered me so much. Like, again, narrator was like, yeah, he wouldn't know that this was the best moment of his son's life. And I'm sitting there like, okay.
So something bad's about to happen.
Something bad's out of it. And so, long story short, Arvin is 17, 18, something like that.
When we see him as Tom Holland, yeah. He's like 18.
He's like 18 or something like that. And he has not even a stepsister, has like somebody who is like kin, quote unquote. And
it was the daughter of the woman that his dad mom, was promised to, but yeah. his dad fell in love with the waitress.
Right. And so long story short, his grandmother was trying to get his dad to fall in love with this girl. But long story short, some shit
happens.
She was
plain. Nobody liked her. She was kind of weird. So and, she ended up with that weird preacher guy.
But before we even get there, you know, the kids are bullying him. And Tom Holland goes to them and whips their ass. And to the point where the one who was...
No, even before that, he tried... But he got his ass. Oh, yeah, he got his ass. They ran off. And then from that point forward, he was still taking care of her, still taking care of her. And we'll get it. Because I want to get to that point where, like, because of both Willard and Arvin's, like, anger issues.
Yes.
Because of what they do, it also causes harm to other people.
Yes. Okay. All right. So I'll wait on talking about the bullies then. So, yeah, you're sitting there and you're dealing with that and you're hearing Arvin trying to articulate. And try to find a way to, like, attack these boys again. That's literally what I would say. Then Robert Pattinson comes in. He's the pastor, the new pastor of the church.
So, yeah, the old pastor is basically, like, up, too old, getting sick, got to move on the way.
And Robert Pattinson is this new, young, up-and-coming pastor who, like, you can definitely tell.
He's a reflection of what will become the modern, like, Southern Baptist pastor.
Yes, and I was just going to say, he reminds me of a... of a very more Bible-esque Joel Osteen. That's mm-hmm. what I was thinking of. The entire time, I'm like, wow, you've really been watching some Joel Osteen for you to be sounding like this. So he's sitting there, and like you can tell he has this televangelist, I call him. Yeah, he has this televangelist feel of him. And he's
talking about the wealth. He's basically putting down poor people, yes. but trying to make it sound in a religious context.
Right. And literally how he basically made fun.
He put them down as like, don't worry, y'all. My flock, as the leader of my flock, the ugly plate with the organs of the animal, when there is good red meat and white meat for all of y'all to feast on, I, as the leader on the flock, will eat. Consume this so y'all don't have to.
And I'm like, bullshit. I'm sitting there like... You knew you wanted them livers, like them chicken livers, because you knew it. You tasted that sauce. Juice. Yes. You taste the sauce and you're like, yes, I want this for myself. Y'all don't have to eat that. But this poor woman, I'm gonna make a parable out of it just so I can eat the rest of this, right? And I'm just like, wow. Okay, great.
Joel and not Steve. To be made look like he's poor.
Yes.
Because he wants to still look like, oh, I got money.
And
I
got Cadillac, and
then,
yeah.
And then if I were seen eating these chicken livers, it would make me seem kind of poor, but he wanted to eat those.
Right. And that's what I was like, the entire time he's trying to seem like he's of money, like he has a Cadillac that's driving to church every day, you know, and
pristine white suits
and like hot, like white suits and very bright colored suits that back in the day cost you an arm and a leg to get. And I'm like, I don't know how any pastor at that time had money like that, but hey, God could be wrong. But anyways, and that started like that started grinding the gears for Tom and how he should react to certain things.
And he already didn't like this guy.
No.
He put down his grandma, and from the jump, his grandma said, I've never been humiliated like that. And Tom wants to go take care of business right there at the church.
Yes.
He's like, I'm going to go talk to him.
I'm going to go whoop his ass right now. But he doesn't. But it only took until Lenora. Was it Lenora?
Lenora.
Yeah, until Lenora.
Because he always would go to her to take her to her mom's grave.
Which we'll talk about in a moment. And do that. But when the one day she decided she did not want to.
This was the day his anger took over. And he was like, I'm going to go take care of the bullies. I'm not going to go stay.
Their ass. Especially the head bully. Almost kills him by how much he was beating the shit out of him.
Beating the shit out of him. Then put a brown paper bag over his face because they were making fun of his stepsister about having to put a brown bag on her head. And so he puts a brown bag on both their heads and busts their teeth into that bag.
And I'm like, oh.
And it flashed back. It did a flashback to Willard doing the same thing to those people who were talking about his wife, just beating the living daylights out of them.
And that's why I was like, okay, cool. I didn't need to hear the narrator say something like that. If you would have just gave me the flashback like you did when he's beating the shit out of these bullies, I'd have been like, wow, he's triggering something that was when he was a kid that he saw that his dad told him.
He's and like, now, oh, you're smaller, so you just wait.
Right, and I'm like, okay, this makes sense, but I don't need the narrator explaining in very great detail of how that was going to happen, you know? And one moment I will say that I really enjoyed that the narrator was not in at all was when Tom was doing his own investigation after Lenora hung herself.
That's the whole thing, because of his anger wanting to go get even with these bullies. Because of that, he left her alone
with Robert Pattinson. Robert
Pattinson, the preacher, who isn't so godly.
Have sex with all of his young parishioners and actually got Lenora pregnant, told her that it would be unwise for her to have this baby because she'll be a whore mother and he wasn't going to help her at all. So she tried to hang herself to basically say, hey, I don't think this is something I want. I don't want to have happen with this child. She wanted to keep it, so she was going to hang herself. And again, I don't need the narrator telling me, oh, she has second thoughts in the middle of causing the act, but she still slips on a bucket and hangs herself. I don't need the narrator explaining that to me. I forgot who plays Lenora. The actor does a phenomenal job of showing you, like, you know what? You're right. This is dumb. I don't want to do this. And just give me her momentum, but you just let me narrate through all of it and have the bucket kick and have her hang herself. And that's what really triggers Arvin to just go, you know what? I'm time to wreak havoc. And that's when I think the movie picks up. But at that point, it's what, hour and a half in? You got a whole hour left?
Hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes. You've given us at least 15 minutes or so of exposition with both Sebastian Stan's storyline as the corrupt sheriff who's working with these mobsters who run a whorehouse.
Yes.
And you don't know why, but apparently they've been giving him money for his elections. And you don't need to know this. You don't need to know why. He tries to go to his sister saying, quit whoring because I got an election. It looks bad when my little sister's out there selling herself. And, you know, he even finds a picture. He doesn't care about her that much. He just doesn't want to look bad.
He doesn't want to look bad. His photo's bad. While Lee, which is Sebastian Stan's character's name, Lee, his sister Sandy, is not also working at the whorehouse, but she's working for her husband, Carl, who basically they take pictures of people and kill them after they're like, they have necrophilia. That's what it is. Carl does. Carl has this sense of necrophilia, and he just loves the idea of like mutilating people while taking photos. And you get that at the beginning of the film where,
it's basically kind of showing like, okay, you have Charlotte and you have Sandy, the two waitresses.
Yes.
And each of them goes to a different guy at the same diner. And Charlotte goes to Willie. And Willard. Again, the narrator calls it. He's like, and little did they know that the two men, that each man they were about to meet, they were going to go on very different paths. So it was basically saying, oh, what if Sandy would have met Willard and Charlotte would have met Carl?
Exactly. And I was just like, all right.
We didn't need that.
We didn't need all that. So Carl and Sandy becomes a thing, and they, again, kill people while they take a photo since the beginning. And that coincides to what happens with Lenora's father.
And mother.
Because father. Father was a crazy ass preacher, let's be honest. Harry Melling, I will say this, he is really what I've saw brick and stone, fire and brimstone preachers. That's who I really seen. I was like, wow, I don't know who Harry got to teach him this, but this is literally what I've been seeing when I was a kid. This is the fire and brimstone preacher, and Harry does a phenomenal job as Roy doing that. And I forgot who Lenora's mother's name is. I forgot her name. No, Charlotte. No, was it not Charlotte? No, Charlotte's Willard's. Yeah, is Willard's mother. I mean, it's Arvin's mother. But whoever Lenora's mother was, she goes, marries Roy, and Roy becomes this crazy pastor, kills her mother because he got bit by a spider. And the narrator is turning you all this, by the way. He gets bit by a spider and start having hallucinations. And he thinks God is telling him that he can have resurrecting powers. So he kills Lenora's mother, tries to resurrect her, realizes that he couldn't. And so he runs, meets Carl and Sandy, and Carl and Sandy kills him because
he won't have sex with her. So, yeah, he dies. And, you know, basically that's how you learn a little bit about what they considered a failed mission when they pick up these young men and try to... It's a failure if they don't have sex with Sandy, and the only picture they get is of him with a bullet hole in his head.
And I'm like, okay, all right. I don't need all this. But thank you for telling me everybody's connected somewhere. Yep, before.
Everybody's connected.
And so you get there, Robert Pattinson.
Which is a great scene with Tom Holland and Robert Pattinson in the church when he's basically running yes. down all of his sins. And then it's not until the moment that Robert Pattinson realizes, oh, he's These talking about
my sins. Yes, those are my sins, not his sins. He's like, how you been knowing about... And then...
says, pull up your cap. Yeah. Let me see who you are.
And realizes that it was... It was Lenora's stepbrother, and he's like, oh no, Mrs. Richards' boy. And he's like, yeah, I've been following you for these last couple of weeks. And he has his father's lair that they supposedly said is the bullet, is the gun that killed
the Luger, yeah.
But we're not going to talk about that. So he takes the Luger and shoots him like, what, 3 or 4 times? Well,
first, he's got it on him. He's like, you do that to my sister too, because he basically been following him doing it to others. Yeah. And then saw him doing ungodly things with his own wife. And then he almost shoots him. Like, he tries to shoot him, but the gun, because it hasn't been used, misfires,
yes.
And he just botches this whole thing and then ends up having to shoot him, like, 3 times. Then he's trying to find the bullet shells, can't find him, so he just and panics
too,
and runs.
And he picks one of the bullet shells. It's too hot for him to grab, and he just goes up and runs and goes back to his hometown where his dad and him were together before his dad slit his throat. Yeah, I mean, slit his own throat.
Right, had the prayer log. And he hadn't prayed, kind of like his father. His father hadn't prayed since seeing the man on the cross. Armin hadn't prayed since basically both his mom and his dad died.
Yeah. And I was about to say, because Charlotte died of cancer. So long story short, the reason why he was moving to his grandparents' house and why Lenora's there. I told you why Lenora's at Mrs. Richards' house. But for Will, Arvin to get there, Willard and Charlotte was living 18 hours away, I think, or something like mm-hmm. that. And Charlotte got cancer. And basically, Willard was doing everything he can to pray and yep. pray the cancer away. And he even sacrifices Arvin's best friend, dog, to basically be a sacrifice for God. So he could basically take the dog, but keep Charlotte here. Fortunately, does not work. So what happens is... Willard one night goes to slit his throat in front of his prayer log, and Arvin is to be the one to go figure that out. Lee, the corrupt Sebastian Stan cop, finds this and is like, "Oh, we're gonna take you to your grandmother's place." So that's why he's going back home to go bury his long lost dog that he never was able to since his childhood, and just
by then he had been picked up by Carl and Sandy, and then he realizes they're up to no good, shoots Carl, and then him and Sandy have a standoff. And turns out her gun's got blanks. And, you know, what's funny is you have the narrator narrating.
Explaining
things.
That.
And then you had him earlier when she was trying to leave him. And then so he's narrating that she was about to leave, but then she changed her mind and drove, parked back up. It's like, okay, we get it. She doesn't want to be with him.
She doesn't want to be with him anymore.
Even when they're having conversations in the car, it's obvious when he's talking about, like, don't we, baby? And she's like, yep, sure.
Trusting actors. And another thing was, to your point, when she was talking about when he found blanks in the middle of the shootout where Tom Holland is like literally shot Riley Keough in the head, and you're like, damn, why didn't her gun shoot off? And it goes to a flashback, and there is like, you know, Carl didn't trust her, so he took her gun and put blanks in it. And I'm like, this could have been something linear, like past tense. I didn't need
and
the narrative
to tell
just
me that. To include them. And yes. It was like, hey, these were bad people, so it's okay that Arvin killed them both. And then also, let's give Sebastian Stan's character, Lee, let's give him motivation to want to go get justice for his sister that he didn't even care about. And then so they have a standoff at his dad's old church. They called it the dad's old church.
Yes.
And Sebastian Stan's gone crazy. And he's trying to cover up all these photos of Sandy and Carl. And, you know, Arvin even tells him, I've got pictures of you. He's trying to explain himself because he doesn't know he knows. But,
he doesn't,
hey,
yes.
I've got these pictures, your sister's in some weird stuff. They killed people. They tried to kill me. And he's just like, oh, yeah, yeah, sure.
Sure,
like, I'll help
whatever.
You out. Yeah, yeah, just come on out. Come on out. Boom. Oh, no worries. A bird scared me. Like,
come on. I know you're trying to kill me, bro. Come on.
And then, of course, they have their standoff, and for some reason, this cop is the worst shot ever.
With a shotgun!
How do you miss point blank with a shotgun?
Bro, from a shotgun, and it looks like it was a 12 gauge. So how do you miss?
You had to aim very wide right.
Like, terribly. And you tell me a Luger, a 9mm Luger, shot you in the gut.
Dead. Boom.
Gone. I'm like, okay. All right, Lee. And so Lee is sitting there dying. And me, I'm not Arvin. I wouldn't do this if I was Tom Holland. He's sitting there like, I'm sorry. I didn't want to. And he shows the photo of, was it Roy?
Yeah.
I think it was a photo of Roy. And he's showing it to Lee. And he's like, yeah, see, that's your sister. I'm not the bad person. They are. It gives the photo to Lee as Lee is dying from this gunshot wound and just passes out. And then basically Arvin gets into a car with a hippie and is on his way to Cincinnati. Yeah, on his way to Cincinnati. And that's the rest of the movie. I'm like, all of that for 10 minutes of action that we got at the end of the movie just to say that.
Oh. I'm not the bad guy. That's at the end of the day, that's what it is. I'm not the bad guy.
Arvin is completely justified for his actions. He's not the bad person here. Everybody else around him is the bad person. He's a product of his own environment. And I'm like,
You do more narration where he looked up and it felt like it was hours, but it was only minutes that Lee was dying.
And I'm like, all right, bro.
And then he gets in the car and he thought about if he would have a family and a kid.
Like his dad.
All he wanted to do was sleep.
But he couldn't because he's in a stranger's car. He doesn't know what's going to happen. I'm like, guys,
movie's over.
We get it. We get it. Just end the movie already. Please, can you just do that? So, yeah, that's in a nutshell what happens in Devil All the Time. And again, as you can tell from our explanation of the story, it jumps too much for us. For mm-hmm. me, it's scattered. It's not a cohesive story. And thinking about it now and like reviewing it now, I had it at 3. I had it at 3 out of 5. I think I'm putting it at 2.5 now.
Yeah, I got it at a 2.5, and that's mostly just performances. Performances are solid.
Is what's helped this film.
The actual like scenery and everything's really pretty. But yeah, outside of that, the story is a mess the way it's told. I don't doubt that, you know, this being based off a book, I don't doubt that maybe it's a good book.
Everybody's saying it's a really great book, and I've been reading reviews about it. That's why I was like, why is this movie so bad? And I look at the reviews. It's received critical acclaim. They love this book.
I mean, I think with a lot of books, if you try to show a movie in the same way you do a book, it doesn't work. It's like video games.
Yes.
They just don't work. You can't translate a game or a book into a movie and try to do it exactly. That's why you have best adapted screenplay. You need to take the book and you need to adapt it to the screen. You cannot tell a book on the screen. There's a difference. Adapt.
And that's what I was just sitting there like, this, I have to go now. It's piqued my interest enough to go read this book because I want to say, if the book is written this way, I'm going to be pissed because literally all you did was just copy paste, and that's what it feels like. And ironically enough, I was talking to one of my friends who was going to be in a podcast later and talks about this exact thing, how video game movies and just adaptations, if you're going page by page, it does not work. And I felt like this was literally a book and they just were like, all right, screenplay, let's go. And that's not how it works. You got to give it more artistic value in that, and you got to, like, I feel like if you'd have changed this linear, it would have been fine. But because you didn't, it just, it's all over
the place. It is what it is, folks. That's it. The Devil All the Time.
2.5 stars from both of us. 2.5.
Netflix. They're hyping it up like crazy. Like I said, star-studded cast. Just weak direction.
Yes.
Very jumbled story. And at the end of the day, watch it if you want to. But it's not a go out and watch it now for me at all.
I would say if you're just looking for something to watch that's just a little bleak and you're like, hey, I want to see something that's bad, go ahead. I'm not bad, but something that's just like very depressing, go ahead and watch it. But I wouldn't say this would be a movie that I would tell you need to go watch now. Mm-hmm. Definitely wait a little bit.
All right. Well, with that, folks, we are going to be out of here. Julian, where can the kids find you?
The kids can find me on Instagram and Twitter at King Julian Owens. And where can the kids find you, Johnny?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Johnny the Wonder, and on Letterboxd at Johnny Boy Wonder.
All right, guys, that is our 52nd episode. Thanks for joining in with us, guys, and we'll see you guys next time.
Later.